Penguin Random House Audio presents One Person, One Vote: A Surprising History of Gerrymandering in America by Nick Seabrook. Read for you by Reynaldo Pinella. To my parents. The conception of political equality from the Declaration of Independence to Lincoln's Gettysburg Address to the 15th, 17th, and 19th Amendments can mean only one thing: one person, one vote. William O. Douglas. Introduction. A uniquely American problem. Redistricting is like an election in reverse. Usually, the voters get to pick the politicians. In redistricting, the politicians get to pick the voters. Thomas B. Hoffler. The results of Wisconsin's 2018 election had to be seen to be believed. The state's controversial governor, Scott Walker, running for a third term in office after surviving a closely contested and high-profile recall effort in 2012, and securing a narrow re-election in 2014, faced off against the Democratic challenger Tony Evers, the state superintendent of public instruction. The election was expected to be a close one. The Cook Political Report rated the race as a toss-up. Both candidates were consistently polling within the margin of error. And prediction models, including Nate Silver's 538, had the contest ranked as one of the closest in the nation. At first blush, very little appears strange about the result. The challenger, Evers, eked out a narrow victory by almost 30,000 votes over the somewhat unpopular incumbent, a margin of slightly more than 1% of the nearly 2.7 million ballots that were cast. Yet peering beneath the surface reveals some disturbing abnormalities. Despite losing the popular vote overall, Walker somehow carried 63 of Wisconsin's 99 state assembly districts and 21 of the 33 state Senate districts. How could a candidate for governor win almost two-thirds of the districts in a state and still end up on the losing side? The answer to that question lies in what may go down as one of the most egregious instances of gerrymandering in American history. The battle over Wisconsin's legislative districts would play out in both the state house and the media, eventually reaching all the way to Washington, D.C., and a showdown before the nine justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. What exactly is gerrymandering? The term has a certain elasticity to it that makes pinning down a concise and consistent definition of the underlying concept somewhat tricky. Writing in the early 20th century, Elmer Griffith, a University of Chicago PhD student whose treatise, The Rise and Development of the Gerrymander, may be among the most cited doctoral dissertations in history, defined the gerrymander thus: districts would not seem, therefore, to be gerrymandered unless they were established especially for election purposes and were formed intentionally in a particular manner for partisan advantage. As a working definition for the purposes of this book, Griffith's formulation is a good start, although perhaps a little more restrictive than I would like. Nevertheless, it serves as a decent jumping-off point for the discussion to come by laying out the three quintessential elements of the practice. Gerrymandering requires intent. One can point to all manner of examples of unfairness, inequality, and injustice in the electoral process that occurred naturally, by accident of history, or through the aggregation of individual decisions about where to live, whom to vote for, and what rules to follow. These are not gerrymanders. At its heart, gerrymandering involves a concerted effort to make the votes of certain groups of people matter more than the votes of others. It can be directed at an individual politician, at an entire political party, at voters in certain regions, or at those who hold specific political views. It is an effort to place a thumb on the scale of representative democracy, stacking the deck before an election has even taken place. Gerrymandering may not always be partisan, as Griffith's definition stipulates, but it is always political. those crafting the gerrymander do so with some concrete political goal in mind. And, as is the case in criminal law, it's often the intent that is the most difficult element to prove. Just as criminal defendants and their attorneys may cook up seemingly innocuous or innocent explanations for their conduct, so too may perpetrators of gerrymandering cloak their actions in subterfuge, obfuscation, or deflection. Demonstrating corrupt intent in these instances can be challenging, although sometimes the circumstantial evidence of the gerrymander itself may be sufficient to carry the burden of proof. Other times, the actions of those responsible are documented in an exquisitely detailed paper trail, the conspiracy laid bare for the courts, the media, and the voting public to peruse at their leisure. And, like the criminal defendant whose lawyer labors in vain to prevent him from running his mouth, those in the business of gerrymandering have a tendency to want to brag about their exploits. These are the easy cases. To give but one high-profile example, when it comes to the recent gerrymander in Wisconsin, we have the receipts. Gerrymandering requires manipulation. It is a departure from business as usual, from the traditional district drawing principles of compactness, of contiguity, of following existing political boundaries, and of preserving the integrity of communities. These manipulations may be subtle, as in the case of a minor modification to a district line that suddenly places an incumbent on the other side, now forced to run for re-election in hostile territory. Or they may be overt, as when an entire state is carved asunder with reckless abandon to serve the whims of the party presently holding power. The gerrymander is an unnatural creation, a violation of the norms, procedures, and conventions of a functioning democratic system. It can take the form of a minor violation, something akin to a speeding ticket on the highway of democracy, or a full-fledged abomination, one that makes a mockery of even the imprimatur of accountability or responsiveness to the will of the people. To gerrymander is to distort, to corrupt, to turn the institutions that should be working on behalf of the people's interests into perversions that serve only the powerful, the moneyed, or the politically connected. Whenever political machinations over gerrymandering are afoot, no matter who wins, it's always the voter who loses. Gerrymandering always involves boundaries. They may be district boundaries, county or municipal boundaries, or even the boundaries of the states themselves. But central to the concept of gerrymandering is the drawing or redrawing of lines on a map. Similar results might be achieved by instituting a poll tax, by imposing a restrictive voter identification law, or by systematically purging individuals from the electoral rolls. These are also not gerrymanders. I would further argue, in another minor quibble with Griffith's earlier definition, that gerrymandering does not require these boundaries to be districts that are established especially for election purposes, or at least not solely for such a use, but they must have predictable electoral effects that can be logically anticipated by those who are responsible for drawing them. Just as good fences make good neighbors, gerrymandered districts make for predictable, orderly, well-behaved voters. Nothing pleases politicians more than knowing that their district is safe, that their majority is safe, that no matter which direction the winds of popular sentiment may be blowing, their shelter is well-built, sturdy, and prepared to weather the storm. But as with Frost's mended wall, sometimes cracks appear in the veneer of politics as usual. Sometimes voters break through the barriers that are erected against their will and make gaps in the well-laid foundations of properly gerrymandered districts. But these examples are few and far between. While polls show that gerrymandering remains unpopular with the general public across the political spectrum, the people who do like it also tend to be the ones who make the rules. I would also argue that gerrymandering, or at least gerrymandering as it is practiced today, is a uniquely American phenomenon. Across the world, virtually every nation that uses districts for its elections has made at least some effort to prevent those in power from manipulating them for partisan gain. To be sure, even the best redistricting practices do not manage to eliminate all traces of electoral unfairness, nor should they be expected to, because such unfairness is endemic to all district-based electoral systems.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?